Welcome everyone back to another episode of the Split Screen Podcast. This is Sean Shaheed, and today we're doing another remake episode of a movie that's actually got a lot of award buzz for 2018, A Star Is Born. We're going to be looking at the various sort of, there was three other remakes. We're going to take a look at a few of those, specifically a Bollywood one as well. But with me today doing the remake show is our fan favorite guest, Alisa Rivera.
Hi! Very excited to talk about this one.
Yeah, it's your idea, right? I didn't even know there was a Bollywood one. I avoided Aashiqui 2 like the plague. So, and I'm also very upset you made me watch that.
Because
it was a very mixed reaction of, hey, Sha, did you know? I'm like, oh, I didn't know. And then, wait, now I have to watch it? Why'd you tell me? All right, so A Star Is Born is, you will know it, this movie, as more of the Bradley Cooper, Lady Gaga debut movie starring also Sam Elliott that released in 2018. However, did you know that there's been three other remakes of this movie before? No, you didn't. Let me tell you. There's been the original that was from 1937. A remake of that was a 1954 movie, which is considered to be sort of the more definitive version starring Judy Garland, who is an icon. The movie was remade again with Barbara Streisand and Christofferson in 1976, which didn't do that well. And the 2018 version is basically the most recent version of that movie, which is getting a lot of Oscar buzz, a lot of awards buzz. And that's what we're here to talk about today. Alisa also reminded me that A Star Is Born has a Bollywood remake that predates the 2018 version, which, I didn't know anything about because I avoided that movie like the plague. Aashiqui 2 from 2013, starring Aditya Roy Kapoor and Shraddha Kapoor. And so I guess we'll be talking about that one too today. Thank you, Alisa. So let's quickly just discuss the 2018 movie, if you don't mind, because that is the most recent one. And then we'll compare the other movies sort of to this iteration. Spoiler review. Alisa, why don't you let us know how you felt about 2018 Star Is Born, starring Bradley Cooper, Lady Gaga, Sam Elliott. The movie is written by Cooper and Eric Roth as well, and this is Bradley Cooper's directorial debut, which he produced, wrote, starred in, learned how to sing, and play the guitar, and I'm gonna shut up now, because...
Well, here's my spoiler. I hated it. And in fact, I have disliked every version of the film I've seen, and I've seen a lot of them at this point. And I was joking around that I was going to channel Kathy Gibson reviewing Tube Light when in my review because she was swearing through the whole thing. And that's pretty much probably what I'm going to be doing. So this fucking movie. So here, let me start with what's good about it. This fucking movie. So the music was good, obviously. The performances were good. Lady Gaga was shockingly good. My expectations for her were very low, and she's actually legitimately a good actor, and she plays the part really well. But this movie is so fucking sexist and regressive. It's appalling that in 2018, with Me Too and the Women's March and... you know, all the stuff that's going on politically around the world with women empowering themselves, that this goddamn movie got remade and it's a hit. It's just like, so... that's my opinion.
So what specifically... Because I'm trying to see it from that perspective. And again, like, I fully admit, I miss a lot of this until I talk to, you know, you guys. And you guys go, remember that part? That was sexist. I'm like, I didn't. Like, I'm very ignorant when it comes to stuff like that. So can you, like, let me know, like, what was it that was so offensive?
Well, so the whole way that a woman's stardom is constructed in the film is offensive, right? Because she is, you know, in obscurity, and this guy comes along and plucks her out of obscurity and throws her in the spotlight. And the film attributes her success entirely to this guy. Whereas, you know, in reality, when you are a successful performer, you spend hours practicing. You spend hours writing your songs. You spend hours in the production booth, you know. And all the effort that she would have had to put in order to achieve this success is completely, like, invisible. You don't ever see it in the film. And it's all about Bradley Cooper, like, grabbing her and throwing her on stage to sing, you know? And it's so... She never gets a choice in any of the stuff that's happening to her in the movie. Like, when he approaches her in the bar, she says no to him, and he doesn't listen to her, and he follows her into the goddamn dressing room, which is a whole other theme that goes on in this movie, right? So he follows her into the dressing room where they're taking their clothes off to harangue her into going out with him, right? Yeah. So then, right. And then he wants her to go to ditch work to fly to wherever it is he's performing.
Yes. Very and Bollywood. Very Bollywood.
Very Bollywood, right? Yeah. And so actually I'm gonna get into that in a minute because I liked Ashiqui 2 better. I didn't say it. That doesn't mean I liked it. I liked it better. And I think the reason why is because the melodrama of the film to me fit better in a Bollywood film than in a Hollywood film. And I'll get into that shortly. But like so she is like, I'm not ditching work, I'm not going to your damn concert. So he sends a goon to stalk her in a car and fucking follow her around and harass her until she agrees to go. I'm like, hello, you know? It's like out of Twilight when the guy this is directly out of Twilight. There's a scene where he shows up at her house and her fucking father lets him into her bedroom without telling her.
Yeah.
She's not even dressed.
Yeah.
He walks into her bedroom unannounced, doesn't knock and ask. And oh my God.
I gotta say, if you're gonna use more Twilight references, you gotta pre-warn me because my head will literally explode.
In Twilight, he climbs in through her window to watch her.
There's a lot of things about Twilight that isn't.
But it's the same thing in this film.
I get it. Yeah, you're fair. Yeah, that's you're right. You're absolutely right.
And so it just, the whole, you know, it erases the woman's agency. It erases her ability to work hard and to earn. She doesn't earn her success. Her success is dropped on her out of the sky by this benevolent god, basically, which is Bradley Cooper. And this is a problem in all the versions of it. It's not the other thing that's shocking to me is that the 2018 version is not very different from the 1954 version. I haven't seen the 37, but the 54 version in terms of plot and the 2018 version in terms of plot are almost identical.
Yes.
It hasn't changed. It's just as gross and regressive. Are you regretting inviting me to talk?
No, I love this. I absolutely love this because you're absolutely right. I didn't catch these things because, again, I guess because we're so institutionalized into seeing these things as either charming or normal or like, yeah, of course, why not? Of course, yeah. A man plucks her out of obscurity and makes her famous. Yes. I definitely don't agree with you 100% on all the things you're saying, specifically when it comes to the 2018 version. So, I mean, obviously, let's get into spoilers right now. Let's get into it's hard to compare because there's all these four movies are very different, but at the same time, they take elements from one another in very seamless ways, including Ashiqui 2, which is sort of like each movie is an amalgamation of the movie that came before it, right? And all the other movies that came before it. 2018 is really different in that sense. Yes, okay, so when it comes to her efforts and what she put into it, a lot of that I feel was deferred in the fact that we knew she wanted to be a singer from when she was a little kid. There's all these scenes with her dad, Lady Gaga, and her you know, father's character, talking about the fact that, you know, how many times you carry my piano up. So it kind of felt like this is always something that she was working towards. She also referenced the fact that she's met a lot of people who said she won't make it because of her nose. So I never saw it as her fame being accredited to him in the movie. It was more of that, you know, their relationship gave her the exposure. And then I felt like, and I felt like the 2018 movie did this a lot better than the other versions, because the other versions show that he has a direct hand in her success. Like, he's in there with her, he's in the studios with her, he's making the connections. Where this was very much someone approached her after her exposure with him on tour, And he didn't really interfere with that. Like, she kind of did this. She kind of changed her look, changed her styles, changed her entire persona. And, you know, he tried to say something that didn't really go down too well. And then he kind of shut up, which sort of led him back down this dark path of, okay, I'm going to support her and not say how I really feel. But then that's going to lead me towards my own demons, which is the alcoholism and the drug use again. So I appreciated that better in the 2018 version, whereas the other versions, going back to the 1954 version, one scene to me was really horrible where she goes through this whole makeover once she's discovered and he kind of consults with the, you know, it's her on like this medical Frankenstein dentist chair, and a bunch of doctors talking about Judy Garland and how she's so ugly and she's so terrible looking and they have to fix all these things about her. And I'm like, poor friggin' girl, like, what is this? And then he doesn't recognize her after her makeover. And he starts laughing, and she's like, no, I can't go. This is how I have to look, because I'm so ugly. And I had a moment where I'm like, oh, this is so sweet, to this is horrifying, because he started laughing, and he's like, come with me, you don't need this. And I'm like, oh, this is so sweet, he just wants her to be herself. But then he, like, smashes her face with, like, cleanser or something, and starts rubbing it all over her face. And I'm like, this is so how do you treat a human being like that? Especially, like, a woman who's, like... So, yeah, so definitely, I find, like, the 2018 version did things, those same elements, a lot subtler.
No, but there's a scene, it's subtler, but it's still there. Like, for one thing, like, when she does her opening performance, mm-hmm. and she's wearing the makeup, and then, you know, he's in the dressing room, and she's taking it off, and he's making, like, weird little comments about her makeup.
Yeah.
So the scene is still there.
It's just... I mean, there's also the scene in the their back to fight scene, which apparently was improvised, where he calls her ugly, like, straight out.
Yeah, that's right.
And apparently that wasn't in the script. That was completely improvised. So Lady Gaga's reaction apparently was very genuine to that. Like, her anger was very much like, what did you say to me? So.
Well, the other thing is, like, in real life, because I don't know if this story actually happened, I'm skeptical, but supposedly she showed up on set the first day fully made up, and he, like, went up to her without permission and took her makeup off. If somebody did that to me, Shaw, I would kick them in the balls. I'm serious. Like, how dare you? You know, like, it's so offensive that they use that to promote the film. And I think it says a lot about the perspective of the filmmaker and the film itself, because that's very much like, he knows better. Oh, no, I'm going to strip you down to your essence and then build you up again. And it's present in all the versions.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, the other thing that's very interesting to me about all the versions of the film is that the male character is more three-dimensional than the woman character.
So my question is, like, what I kind of was a little bit unexpected for me when it came to this movie, The Star is Born, is the title very much implies that the story should be about her. But
it's about him.
The way I came up, right.
And that's true in all the versions. And the actors tend to be really good in all the versions. Like, James Mason plays the husband in the 54 version. He's amazing in it. Yes. And Aditya was great. Right. You know, he's also very handsome. I'm a little biased. he's the handsomest, version of that character. It's just a meatier part. The woman is there just sort of there, like, in a lot of ways, you know, to be self-sacrificing to the guy.
I mean, it's also weird sort of, I mean, okay, so talking about the Ashiqui 2 version, I felt like I didn't think about it in the sense that you're saying, that the story's melodrama leads better to it being a Bollywood movie than sort of an American Hollywood movie, which... I will agree with, but not in an agreeable way. Like, I agree that there's melodrama, but the thing I didn't like about Ashiqui 2 was that there's so much melodrama. And I absolutely hate this director, Mohit Suri. His movies are all like this. They're all flashy and style and sort of like, you know, monologues and one-liners without context, without any logical sort of rationale in the story's context. And Ashiqui 2 was exactly the same thing. I also found what I liked about the 2018 version was that, you know, like, okay, so here's my interpretation of events of the 2018 version, okay? You tell me if you interpret these differently. So, he's obviously an alcoholic. He definitely has some baggage with his parents and his dad and his brother, Sam Maia's character, which leads him to drinking. He's losing his hearing, which also sort of probably, you know, out of that despair, he's drinking, he's, you know, drugging and sort of declining his career. He meets her. He has sort of this sort of renaissance. However, he's still drinking. He's still kind of in a self-destructive nature, which causes problems in their relationship. He gets better. He kind of drops it all cold turkey. He gets better. However, the fact that she starts sort of, for lack of a better phrase, selling out who she is, like she becomes this pop star instead of what they were together, sort of this country duo. And the fact that he can't express it, like he tried to tell her that, hey, you're selling out. Like, you're not yourself, which led to a horrible fight. And then he had to kind of suppress it. That he, okay, let me just support her. Let me not criticize her, blah, blah, blah. But I feel like that led him to drinking again, like progressively. There's that scene where she's just on concert and he's just backstage and he kind of just grabs a beer. You know, it's not melodramatic. It's not Ashiki 2. It's not, you know, smash, right? It's very much like a progressive thing where he starts getting drunk again because, again, he can't express how he really feels about her career taking off, which for him is a betrayal of an artist or whatever. And then he obviously, then the whole, you know, Oscar, Grammys, I think?
Pisses himself. Scene
happens where he sort of melts down in public and goes back to rehab. And then he goes to rehab and he comes back. And to me, the ending of that character's story between 2018 and the other versions, not counting 1976, because that was weird, is really different. Because I feel like in the 1954 and Ashiki 2, that decision comes very much impulsively and not out of clear-headedness, you know, because both those characters were drunk and then they go to bed. And they overhear someone telling, you know, their significant other that, listen, he's going to drag you down. You're going to ruin your career because of him. And they overhear their, you know, the woman character, the star is born, basically tell them that, hey, I'll give up everything to take care of him. And so they decide to, spoilers, guys, the hero of these movies killed themselves. Okay? They die at the end of the movie. So I feel like in 1954 and Ashiki 2 version, that decision very much comes from, you know, they're drunk in bed, they get up the next day, lie to their significant others, and go drown themselves. Whereas in 2018, I feel like that decision that he makes, which makes it, I think, so much more tragic, comes from very much a place of, first of all, suicidal tendencies that he claims he had when he was younger. He's completely sober now. He's not drinking. And in that moment of vulnerability and sort of recuperating, getting back his life, he's faced with that reality that you're the worst thing that can happen to the person you love. And then he makes that decision, and it's a clear-cut decision. It's not impulsive. He plans it. He takes some pills, and he goes into the garage. You know, it's a planned suicide, which to me makes it more tragic that, okay, he, under sort of very clear circumstances, he thought this out and then decided to kill himself. Whereas other guys were drunk, you know, stepped it off, woke up, and decided to kill themselves and lied about it, and were all cheerful. But I don't know. That's just my perception of it. You can definitely tell me when I'm wrong, and I will gladly accept that.
And I mean, I'm going like this right now because I'm about to get into it with you.
Yeah. No, go ahead.
Okay, so first of all, who the hell is he to judge her career?
Yes, absolutely.
Right. Who the hell is he to talk about her authenticity? Right. Like, that's bullshit, and I just found it really offensive. That, you know, he's portrayed as being more authentic than her, and that somehow her decisions about her own artistic expression are invalid compared to his perception of what she should be doing instead. It's just gross. I mean, if she's an adult woman and she's choosing this path, right? But the way that the film is set up, it's like she's either under the thrall of Bradley Cooper or she's under the thrall of the producer, right? And so she's like, there's no sense that she is directing her own career either. She's listening to Bradley Cooper, or she's listening to the producer, right? And not being treated as an adult woman with the agency to make her own decisions, right? She's always being dragged to do something with somebody else. It's bullshit, right? I mean, even when they get married, you know, she doesn't really, like, he's like, let's get married. And everybody goes, yeah, we're going to do it right now. And then she's just, suddenly she's married. And that she doesn't really even get a chance to say yes or no about it. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
You know? And then, so then the suicide had me, oh my God. Okay, so in the 1954 version.
Yes.
1954 version, James Mason kills himself in a way that makes it seem like an accident. he walks into the ocean and drowns. So it's not, even though we as the audience know that he's committed suicide, in the terms of the narrative, the public doesn't know that he committed suicide. It's considered an accidental drowning. So in a way, to me, that was more noble and self-sacrificing because he's not publicly humiliating his wife with the suicide, right? But then in Ashiki, he fucking takes a swan dive off a freeway overpass, right? And it was so it's an obvious suicide, which boomerangs back onto Shraddha and makes her look horrible because her partner killed himself. Right. And then, wait, let me finish. And then the 2018 version makes it even worse because he kills himself in the house. So who found the body? She could have found the body. She could have come home and seen him hanging from the rafters, which is a hostile act. Ooh, it's hostile.
That's so
it's
true.
It's evil. It's mean, right? He didn't know who was going to find his body. He killed himself in the house they shared. She probably had to move out because of PTSD. I was so angry.
God, you're so right. Yeah, shit.
It was like, oh, it was not romantic or nice or it's not. It was awful.
You're
it was
absolutely right. Yeah, Jesus.
And so I was like, in that way, since it was actually worse than the 54 version.
So I'm just kind of processing sort of the different reactions we're having is because I guess when you're looking at the story from her perspective and she's not just a character in the story, in his story. You're absolutely right. It's very much like, holy crap, like, what a dick. But I've been watching the movie from his perspective of him being the main character, and I'm going, oh, poor, like, oh, his demons, and so tragic, oh, tears. But yeah, you're absolutely right. If you look at it from her perspective, and she's the main character, yeah, what the hell? Like, if she didn't send someone to the house to check up on him, she would have gone about her business, had a great performance, come home, holy shit, life ruined, PTSD for life, forever and ever.
Yeah, it's frustrating. It's really frustrating and infuriating. And
yeah, absolutely right. I completely get that perspective. Yeah, yeah.
You know, Jesus. I think, and like I said, what I find disheartening and upsetting is that this film has been remade a lot. It's obviously, it's a myth that is very relevant. That's right. There's mm-hmm. something universally appealing about it that there's cross-generation. All the versions have been hits. I think even the 70s version wasn't a total flop, right?
It was critically not received well.
Okay. Like something, though, I really liked about going to Ashiki, because we've been talking a lot about the 2018 version, and I know you didn't like Ashiki. I liked it better.
Let me just roll up my sleeves.
I know. But one thing I thought was, because this is something that comes up a lot in Indian films and that I actually appreciate, is class issues and the very clear class issue of her being like singing in this bar and basically mm-hmm. almost like indentured servitude. Like she paid a fee to sing in the bar and he has to bail her out of fee to get her out so that she doesn't have to continue singing.
Well, it's like those contracts, right? Like those studio contracts that even in Hollywood happens, right? Where it's like, right, you know, a studio is like, you're contracted to us.
And that, you know, that her, it was very clear that she was really struggling financially and that her family was depending on her. And I actually liked that interjection. It made, you didn't, okay. I thought that made it, because I think it gave her more, even though, okay, I just want to get this out of the way. Shraddha cannot fucking act, okay? She is terrible.
I mean, I'm sure she's better now, to give her the benefit of the doubt, but this was one of her earliest things she's ever did.
But even in Stree, she was just not, I thought she was totally the weak link in Stree, which was a problem. But she's a terrible, so unfortunately there was a lot she could have done with the role that didn't happen. Like there's a part, remember the scene where she tears up the room and she's totally blank while she's doing it? I don't even know how you can do that as a human being, like to do that with no expression on your face. It almost seems like you'd have to will so yourself to do that. But anyway, she's bad. But I did appreciate that she had a little bit more motivation for her pursuing this in terms of the money and the family pressures that she was under, and I felt like her part was written a little more fully than in some of the other places, which is quite amazing.
I have a question for you now, then, in that case. Because again, as you said, one of the things you didn't like about sort of all the versions is that her fame is accredited to the guy. I just want to ask you, like, didn't you think that was a lot more intentional in Ashiki 2 than the 2018 version? Because in Ashiki 2, he literally has to go to producers and be like, no, give her a chance. She's amazing, I swear. Like, he's literally going out hustling for her shot, which to me was very much like, why don't you just give him a demo tape? Like, what? This shouldn't be that hard that you're having to go out and, like, sell your soul to give her a chance. Like, this doesn't... And the conversation was always about, no, she's beautiful, and you know, and it was very superficial. It wasn't like, she's a superstar. And it's like, bro, like, can you, like, do you have, like, a recorder on your phone? Just record her voice and, like, make someone listen. Like, I don't understand why this has to be such a drawn out process. And that movie took so long to get her into that recording studio. Like, that movie took such a long time to establish her as someone who is talented. You know, for the other people in the narrative, right? For everyone to go, oh, wow, yeah, she's pretty talented, you know, or she's got something. It took so long, whereas the 1954 version, you know, different from the 2018, because 2018, she just goes up on stage and instant fame. The 1954 is like, oh, she's good enough to sort of be an opening act for the main star to begin with, right? Like, she's one of the few people that are on stage already. So she's definitely got something, but he sees something more. But Ashiki 2 took forever for us to get there that, oh, she's got something. And for other characters in the story to acknowledge that too. Which to me seemed really like a lot of work. And also in 1954, they do something in the Ashiki 2, which 1954 did as well, where, you know, the guy meets the girl.
Right.
Says, I'm going to make you a star, baby. And then through different circumstances, they lose touch and she can't get a hold of him again. The 1954 version was very much like, you know, Judy Garland's character was very much like, you know what, screw this guy, whatever, you know, he promised me something, he didn't follow through for whatever reason, I'm gonna make it on my own, sort of a thing, right? So she took that in a positive
way.
That's true. The Shraddha Kapoor thing in Ashiki 2 was, again, very much like, you know, I'm gonna go back to bar singing, and like, it was very much like, again, it's like the movie was, and the director was saying that, oh yeah, without him, she's got nothing. She can't go anywhere or make it on her own. And again, everyone, she melodramatically went back to her old bandmate and was like, I need a job. And, you know, her mom's like bitching her out all the time, you know. Like, that to me seemed a lot more overt, that it's like, yeah, you're nothing without him, than the 2018 version was, which I didn't like. So I now that you've clued me onto that track, I'm kind of like, wait a minute, right? I have more things I didn't like about Ashiki 2.
No, those are really valid points, and I agree with you on that. I agree with you, Sha.
And good night.
A miracle. I think you're right. I think you're right about that.
My biggest problem, I think, with Ashiki 2, and this might be because I sort of had some addiction issues too in the past, is that they never sort of address the alcoholism, and they speak about it in very sort of romanticized terms. Like, there's a line that made me literally, like, I had to get up and, like, walk away for a second, because that scene where she's basically saying, right before he kills himself, she's basically telling, you know, a third character that, you know, I'll take care of him no matter what, you know, blah, 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 you know, I'll give up my career to take care of him. And in that monologue, Shraddha Kapoor's character says something like, if this is his first love, then I'll do it with him. You know, I'll also get drunk and I'll also stumble along. And I'm like, no, this is a disease. This is not. And then when he's apologizing to her the next day, he says something like, you know, I did bevafai with you, which is like betrayal, you know, or in that context of a relationship.
Like a lover. Like on you. Yeah.
So again, he's talking about alcoholism as if that's some, like, it's like a hobby. It's like my passion, right? I'm cheating on you with booze. And it's never fully explained. Like, again, like the Bradley Cooper character, you get so much sort of insight. His dad was an alcoholic, so it could be like a genetic thing. It could be like a hereditary thing. His situation, his losing his hearing, like his relationship with his brother. You know, there's so much. This guy has so much crap in his life that it's like, okay, I can attribute some of that to the drinking, you know? Whereas this guy was like, he just became famous early. And I think it also perpetuates this narrative that Bollywood has about, like, westernization, that, you know, with fame, with money, becomes corruptness and drinking and drugs and promiscuity. you know, without any reason. Like, it's just, that's the that's sort of what happened. Like, the de facto reason. You become famous, right. You become Western, you become, you know, you get money. These are the things you do automatically. Like, there's nowhere in that movie that you kind of get a reason of,
right.
Why are you drinking, bro? Like, are you hurting? Like, who hurt you? Like, what's your problem? He's just kind of like, I got famous early and I never tried, so booze. And he's always like, and he's playing drunk very self-pityingly. Like, Bradley Cooper playing drunk was very much like, this guy's fucked.
This is where I'm going to disagree with you, because I actually think Bradley Cooper's
really
was very self-pitying. I think all of them are. I mean.
But it was very somber, though. It wasn't overtly like, feel sorry for me. Like Ashikutu, the monologues were very much like, you know, he was like laughing and smiling and, you know, like, it's like the very Devdas sort of way of drinking, which I always have a problem with on screen. Like, usually when people get drunk, they either act stupid, they act oblivious, like that whole Grammy scene where he's walking around just oblivious to the fact that he's making a scene. Whereas Ashikutu, he's always aware that he's making a scene, but he's just like, this is who I am, you know, I'm worth shit.
No, it's very old fashioned.
And it's just like, oh my god, like, get over it.
I'll give you that on alcoholism.
So yeah, like Norman Maine, like 1954, his drunk was like a fun drunk. Like, he was being obnoxious, but he was being self-pity. He was just like, oh my god, this guy is drunk and he's making a scene. But he himself was very much like, woo!
Yeah.
So, like,
well, no, but you know, actually, the scene that really got to me in the 54 version that I thought was brilliantly done by him, he's a really good actor. He's like somebody I like a lot in a different roles, is when he's been arrested and he's in the drunk tank and he just looks so ashamed of himself and so humiliated. And he played that really well. Like, I actually felt sorry for him in that scene, and mostly I don't feel sorry for anybody in these films, but that particular one I thought was well done.
Well, and that's the other thing too that I liked about the 2018 version, with that last dialogue between Lady Gaga and Sam Elliott, where, because that entire movie, she was always the one that never sort of saw anything that he did as being wrong. And I love that last scene, which apparently wasn't supposed to happen, it was supposed to be someone else. But that last scene with Sam Elliott was like, no, he did this to himself. Like, it's not your fault, it's his fault. And I love that accountability was placed back on the guy who killed himself and more or less kind of screwed up this girl's life, even though he did it for noble reasons. Whereas, you know, Ashikutu, the manager, yells at her for being upset. And it's like, he wouldn't want you to do it. He did this to save you. And it's like, really? Like, you're going to tell her now how to live her life because of the sacrifice he made by killing him? Like, get out of here. Like, he was literally yelling at her. And I'm like, this is the worst.
No, it's pretty bad. But I mean, I feel like they're all bad. I mean, because why does he kill? The thing is, like, why does he kill himself anyway? It's just totally unnecessary. He couldn't have just said, no, I'm not going to let you quit. Don't quit on my behalf. You know, like, that would have been a reasonable reaction.
That's what I never got
to say. Or he
well, and also, and also, the
up
messed
with
up
her
thing
without
too.
Killing himself, right? If he didn't think.
Well, and see, the other thing that makes me upset about Ashikutu and some of the other ones even more is, when Bradley Cooper made that decision, he was sober, but he did one thing that apparently her career couldn't recover from. That was the whole spiel, right? That just by you being with her, you're ruining her career because of what you did. One mistake, you can't recover from it. Ashikutu, he promised to get sober, got drunk, promised to get sober, got drunk. Like, this happened more than twice for the same reasons. So it was kind of like, okay, your behavior is dragging down her career. So you have an alternative. Hey, get sober. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't like he didn't really make any effort
but
to.
This is. No, I know, but this is the problem too with the woman's character, because, you know, she is so willing to throw her career away for him. Well, why? I mean, she's been working for this her whole life, presumably, like, or you know, so
or
like
wanting it, yeah.
Yeah, so like the level of martyrdom, it was just like, are you f***ing kidding me? Like, why are you so willing to give up everything? It doesn't make any sense.
No, not at all.
You know? And, you know, they, just speaking for, because I actually have talked about this a lot in other contexts about some women fantasies, women-oriented fantasies that involve a man plucking a woman out of obscurity, or a man who's like, you're special, and this one guy who's amazing sees your inherent specialness, and because he acknowledges you, suddenly you become valid. And this is super, like, even this is a real life example, but like the whole thing with Meghan Markle marrying Prince Harry, like, there are these crazy fans who follow her, who are totally bought into this fantasy of like how she was like picked out, you know, picked out by Harry and elevated. And it's creepy because it's women who are, you know, buying into this in a very emotional way that's like kind of frightening. And I think it comes from the fact that a lot of women do feel disempowered. So like, this is a weird way to be like, a fantasy that allows women to feel a sense of power in the context of the patriarchy. You know, like, I am so special. I can't act on my own behalf, but I am so special that I don't need to act on my own behalf.
All right. Well, I think, yeah, I think if we've beaten this dead horse as much as we could possibly do. Alyssa, I know at the end of the day, first of all, thank you so much for getting me to watch these, because I don't think I would have had these revelations during this conversation if I didn't have this conversation after watching the movies. I think I would have been going, 2019, you know, A Star Is Born should win all the Oscars. Now I'm like, well, some of them, maybe. But so let everyone know where they can get a hold of you on Twitter.
My Twitter is @BollywoodNewbie, N-E-W-B-I-E.
Perfect. And once again, thank you so much for being here, and thank you so much for this suggestion. If you like what you heard, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, and let me know what you guys thought of any version of A Star Is Born, including Aashiqui 2, even though I might delete those comments. No, I'm kidding. I won't do that. Thank you so much for listening once again. For the Spiskin Podcast, my name is Shashi Heath.